Hey folks, welcome to Woodwose Radio. Tonight I thought we would premiere our newest weekly show on top of our regular flagship show on Saturday nights. We're going to be hosting what I call Tarot Talk every Tuesday night at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. So it's going to be a chance to learn about the tarot, and it's going to be a chance for you guys to phone in with your questions. We might do a little reading later in the second hour or what have you. So, you know, I'm going to bring our reader on and have her introduce herself, and let's start. Welcome.
Hi. My name's Joy. I'm a tarot reader who's been doing this for about 21 years now. So I have a bit of experience with it. I don't know really what to say at this point. I mean, it's supposed to be an introduction. My magical name is Aaron. I am a Wiccan priestess in the Sayax Wiccan path. Like I said, I've been doing readings professionally and amateurly for better than 21 years now. I was taught by my spouse, who has also taught about six other people who are also professional readers at one time or another. I was reading for a while with a phone-in psychic line called Cabrina's Psychic Answer. That company went defunct probably about 15 years ago. So I've been doing it, you know, online readings and in-person readings since then. And that's about it so far. Oh, I'm a member of the American Tarot Association. It's a collection of professional psychics and tarot readers. So that, you know, you can have a credential that you can point to say, hey, look, I'm a tarot reader. I'm also ordained through the Universal Life Church, so that's always good. That's about it so far.
That's pretty cool. So I guess if there's not much else, we might as well dive straight into talking about the history of tarot.
Okay. Well, the tarot cards, the history is kind of vague. There are some things that can be said to have happened with the tarot. But the actual origin of the tarot cards is kind of shrouded in mystery. There's legends of it coming from Egypt. There's legends of it coming with the Romani people as they migrated around. There's legends of it being developed in Italy. There's legends of it coming from Atlantis, I've heard. But the main basic thrust of the tarot is that it was a deck of playing cards. It started out as a game, and that we can trace the origins back to. The game seems to have originated in Egypt and somehow migrated over to Italy, probably right around the Romans and such. Although I don't have a history in front of me, so don't quote me on that fact. And they used it as a playing card game, which is where our modern deck of cards comes from, the regular Rider playing cards that we use for spades and hearts and everything comes from there. Trying to organize my thoughts here.
No worries.
We do know that eventually what wound up happening was they got turned into the tarot decks that we know now. Somewhere right around the 17th century, there was a gentleman, they had been working with using them in divination for a while, most notably the Romani people, the gypsies. But a gentleman that I know of named Elphas Levi, who was a Christian monk who got defrocked for this, gave them their mystical associations that we still have now. And he, I don't know about popularized them, but certainly gave them a lot of the symbolism and kind of codified it, I believe, so that it was a little bit more standard. And a lot of those mysticism associations are still in use today. For example, there's a card in the Major Arcana called the Hierophant, which shows a priest and some acolytes, and it tends to stand for a hidebound person, somebody that is very invested in the way things are and keeping them that way forever, with the spin being somebody that is invested in stagnation. And that is, straight out of the Roman Catholic Church at the time, where the people, the priests at the time, were very much invested in keeping everything the way it was and not growing and not changing. And if you look at the Catholic Church today, you can still see that going on. But that's an example of some of the associations that were pulled in due to the Christian influence. And it's kind of ironic, I always thought, that because an ex-Christian monk gave us most of the mystical associations that the Christians then turn around and decry as evil.
Well, for sure. I mean, but that's sort of the way tarot has been, for the past few centuries. I mean, it becomes this enemy, this devil's picture book kind of thing. But I mean, it can be looked at in so many different ways, and I mean, the symbolism is so rich, right? It's just kind of weird to sort of dismiss it as being so, unimportant or evil.
Well, I think the dismissal with evil comes from Western culture. Understand that most of Western culture is based on Christianity. It's not made to be only a Christian culture, but most of the basic influences in the society come from Christian morals and Victorian morals and that kind of setup. So you have this pervasive belief that anything that you can't see, touch, smell, or hear, or that is sanctified by the Christian Bible is evil. And unfortunately, one of the things that is in there that is decried as evil and anathema and bad for anybody to practice is divination. King Solomon, King Saul, that's right, consulted the Witch of Endor, but at the same time said in there, let none of you consult with familiar spirits or practice divination or future reading. And, you know, it's kind of hypocritical at that point, but it's still, you know, one of the things that is believed, and that belief has been folded into the roots of our society, and it continues on even to this day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is just sort of a handed down kind of superstition that makes it evil.
Yeah, and tarot is anything but evil. I mean, it really is. It is used as a something that we can consult for an idea about the future. It's not showing you the exact future. It's not showing you any super likely future. It is showing you what is possible. There's a theory with divination and future reading that every possible choice can be made at any point in time. It's reflected in the physics belief of the multiple universes, where there is all kinds of possibilities at any point in time. What tarot shows is one possible future if nothing changes from that point where the reading is done. And that's all it's showing. It's not showing something that is the most likely outcome. It's not showing what is going to happen with no choice, because we always have free choice. We can always choose not to do something or choose to get rid of an influence, and that changes the possible futures completely. So you're dealing with something that shows one possibility out of an infinite spectrum of possibilities. And that's, you know, that's no different than going and reading a book about a how-to where you fix your own car. You know,
yeah, for sure. And I think that's sort of the way it is with divination, too. I mean, any sort of divination tool that you use is only showing you the course of present events. But again, you know, as you say, every single decision that you make from that point onward can change the outcome.
And even just something as simple as knowing that something is possible changes it. If I did a spread for myself and I didn't realize that it was a possibility that, for instance, my sister was going to come visit, but the card showed that it was a possibility that she was going to come visit, I would take that knowledge and roll it into my day-to-day actions, and I may clean a little bit more. I may, you know, decide to check the toilet to make sure that it's not going to get plugged and find that there's something that's wrong with it and get that fixed and spend some money, which changes another decision, which changes another decision. You know, just having the knowledge that something is possible starts affecting future decisions, which is the main reason why everybody there's a pervasive superstition that you can't read for yourself. Aside from the fact that you can't really objectively look at your own life and interpret what the cards are saying well, in most people's belief, just having the knowledge that something might happen changes how you start reacting to the world around you, and that could change the outcome completely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I know that every tarot reader or dabbler that I've ever known has, you know, been taught that rather unnecessary sort of superstition of not reading for yourself because of the potential for, you know, not accurately reading. But at the same time, I think it's just sort of a habitual thing that, you know, like everything else, gets handed down without questioning and without, you know, considering the truth behind it.
Yeah, it is a pervasive belief. I mean, when I was taught to read tarot, I was told that it was, you didn't read for yourself simply due to the fact that it takes away options. by knowing that this is a possibility and knowing that this is going to occur, it starts subtracting options from what you can do. And that's, you know, the knowing that a possibility is a possible, and you start reacting differently in the future. I just completely lost my train of thought. I don't believe this. I hate it when this happens. Anyway, the superstition itself, it's not necessary, I don't think. I think it is possible to do a one or two or three card reading for yourself and not spoil things, to give you a general idea of what is going to happen for the day, for the week, for the month, and to, you know, just prepare yourself mentally for things, for situations that could occur. And I think, and there's a lot of readers that actually do that. A more complex spread on a specific life issue that you're having, that gets a little bit more problematic because, yes, it is very hard to objectively look at your own life. I've done readings for other readers who, you know, have done a reading on a situation in their life. They're a little confused about it. They're not seeing all the aspects. And they call me or they get in touch with me and they ask me to do a reading on the same thing. And I'm able to find other nuances that they might not have considered, but in retrospect are obvious in their spread when they go back and look at it and compare the two. So it's, you know, a matter of what you're focused on and what you can see. And sometimes a fresh pair of eyes works. But it is possible to look at your own situations objectively and, you know, react to them.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it's sort of necessary in order to sort of be able to take control of your own life to respond. And I think if tarot does nothing else for a person who's reading for themselves, then at least it provides that awareness to take action, you know, for the good or bad of a situation. I'm being told by one person in the chat room right now that he can't hear anything at the moment. I'm just double checking with a couple of friends right now to see if they can hear or not. Because it would be a first if it wasn't working. And I'm just getting a report right now saying okay, yeah, we're live. Okay, excellent.
Okay,
thank you
do
for
I need
that,
to
bye.
Speak up or something?
No, it's just, it seems this particular listener is having some trouble, because I've got other people saying that they can hear us live, so. But that's okay. Yeah, I don't know what to do about that, Matt. Sorry. But anyway, back to the topic. So we've addressed the history. We've addressed kind of a bit of the superstition surrounding it. Now, did you want to sort of start in on picking one of the major arcana and then talking about, like, the ones or something tonight, or the aces?
Well, actually what I would like to do tonight is just answer general questions, talk about general things with it, because what I'd really like to happen is next week I would like everybody to have the deck that they feel comfortable reading with, so that they can actually go through the deck with me while I'm talking about it and look at their cards and look at their book that comes with the deck and kind of relate what I'm saying about my deck and tarot decks in general to what they specifically have in front of them. So if you don't mind, I'd rather just stick on general topics tonight and questions from the chat or, you know, call-in questions or things like that.
Okay, no problem at all. Yeah, and I think tonight we're just going to keep it to an hour because it's just kind of a premiere show, and we don't have a lot of listeners that I'm aware of so far. So I guess one of the things that people kind of want to know when they first sort of get curious about tarot is how do you go about picking a deck?
Oh, picking a deck. There's a lot of ritual around that and a lot of superstitions also. Mostly you pick a deck by what appeals to you. And when I say what appeals to you, it's not only visually, but it's also the feeling that you have deep down in your soul as to which deck is going to speak to you. Because each deck, each different deck, has a voice of its own. They're people, essentially. They're showing thought forms to you, and each of those cards and each of the decks have a personality of their own. Some decks are very, very easy to read. Some decks are very, very hard to read. Some decks show you spiritual and psychic things rather than the mundane. Other decks show you the material world. And you can have all of these in a deck, and each different deck addresses different problems. I've got six different decks, two of which I read from. One is the Robin Wood Tarot, and it started reading for me as soon as I picked it up and did my very first spread. It was very accurate. It was almost scarily so at times. And I've got a Celtic Tarot deck that I also use. But the two decks read very, very differently. The basic meanings of the cards don't change, but where I will get one card for a meaning in the Robin Wood deck, in the Celtic deck, I'll get a totally different card that means the same thing. And this isn't bad, because the way they relate to other cards in the spread gives nuances and changes a tone and stuff like that. I'm being reminded by my partner that you can have more than one friend, and therefore you can have more than one deck that talks to you in different ways. It all depends on what your goal is and what you're trying to get out of the reading. If you're trying to understand a specific situation spiritually and what it means to you, you may use one deck. And if you're looking at a problem with your work, you may use another deck, because those decks talk to those subjects stronger than others. Choosing the deck, mostly it's what appeals to you and what feels right to you when you pick it up and hold it in your hand. There's a lot of places that have tester decks that are already open, so you can open them up and take the cards out and look through them. Obviously not bookstores or malls or things like that, but, you know, metaphysical shops. And you can get a feel for what the cards look like, how they feel visually, what the various symbolism that is pictured on the card is. And you can use that as an opportunity to feel the energies about the deck and how they are probably going to read for you before you buy your own deck. I was saying that there was a superstition around buying decks. The one that I was taught was that you can't buy a deck for yourself. It has to be gifted to you in order to make it the most powerful. There are others that find that is complete bunk, because you're buying a deck for yourself to read for yourself, so why won't you give the money for it? But I believe that harkens back to the Wiccan or the magical rule that you find your tools yourself, and you just pay the price it is. You don't try to haggle for it. You don't look around for the best price. You just pay whatever the merchant is asking for your tool. And a tarot deck is another tool.
Yeah,
so
for
sure. I believe that's where that comes from. Although it's persisted into the New Age groups as well, for them not buying their own tarot decks but having to have it gifted. I do know that if you gift a tarot deck to somebody else, You are supposed to write a dedication on one of the on either one of the flyleaf cards or on the book of interpretation that comes with it. Just a little, you know, please read this, guardian, you know, may it always show something to you. Kind of like you would give on a card, simply to put your energies into it as well, and give it a little bit extra push to make it more accurate.
Interesting. Yeah, and I think one of the things that you want to be really aware of when you're choosing a deck, too, is how the cards handle. Like, there are decks that I own, like the Druid Craft Tarot, that are gigantic compared to the standard Rider Waite. You know, and there are others that are, like, a little more flexible and some are stiffer. So, you know, when you're choosing your deck, do get a feel for the cards if you can sample the deck.
Absolutely. The texture of the cards and the way they handle in your hand is so important. It's harder to use an oversized deck, and some people with large hands find it very hard to use a small, compact deck. So, yeah, those are issues that you also want to think about.
Okay, so one of the things that I've actually addressed with people previously through my blog, actually, is how do you, like, what sort of rituals do you use before you start reading? Because I personally have taken to the habit of knocking on my deck like 3 times to sort of wake it up. You know, it's something that I've chosen to do. You know, it's not some mandatory thing that I was told must be done, but...
Oh, the reading rituals. Those are actually your own decision. Like you said, knocking on the deck 3 times to wake it up, that's an absolutely wonderful one. I've never heard that one before. There are... my wife uses a prayer to get an accurate reading. She says this ritual prayer every time before she starts reading, and gets asks the Lord and Lady to help her interpret the cards correctly, have them, you know, show up in the order that she needs to best deliver what the client needs, not necessarily what they want. I personally take a few moments to calm and center, to clear my mind. I shuffle the deck a few times, pretty much to wake it up, as you said, before I even start concentrating on the question. But in any ritual like that, you want to make sure that it is the same every time, because ritual is exceedingly important in that it gets you into a specific mindset, an altered state, essentially, where you are more receptive, where things come easier from the ethers, so that you can interpret the cards more accurately. And if you change it every single time you pick up your deck, that's going to hinder that process. It's going to change it around enough so that it's like starting anything new. You have your routine when you come in to work and sit down, and you do you turn on your computer and you get your coffee and you organize your papers. If for some reason you came in one day and you grabbed your coffee first and then went to a meeting and then came back and spoke to somebody else, when you finally got back to your desk, you'd be really discombobulated because your papers aren't organized, your coffee's not there, your computer's not on, you haven't read your emails. And so this is the same as the starting rituals for doing a reading. But in any case, one of the things that you do want to get in there is you want to clear your mind of your concerns. Because if you're doing a reading for somebody else, your problems are irrelevant. It is the client's problems that you're focused on and that you should be focused on. So you want to get rid of your concerns. You want to get rid of the things that you're thinking about and you're worrying about. Because if you start worrying about your kids during your client's reading about their job, you're going to have children start show up in the deck.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it really is an important point too. When you're beginning, you know, there's going to be, I think it's important that you sort of trust your own intuition as far as the rituals that you do use.
Absolutely.
The forms of meditation or preparation, centering, what have you, that you do choose to use. Like, I know people who visualize a white light filling their, you know, their bodies and that sort of thing to sort of cleanse them of the concerns of the day or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, as a beginner, what you're going to want to do is to take the time to try out different things. If you've read about a particular author's take on, you know, preparation rituals or, you know, like in, like I said, knocking on the deck or what have you, try them out. If they don't work for you, then, you know, try something else. As Joy said, it's a matter of deciding the rituals that you want to start with, because it puts you into a certain state of mind.
Yeah, and that's part of the process of breaking in a new deck. Typically, when you get a brand new deck, once you unwrap it and you go through it, you spend like 3 or 4 weeks getting to know the deck and how it's going to read for you and what it's going to talk to. Part of the process is infusing your energy into the cards, but part of that is also finding out what rituals you want to use for reading with that deck, for interacting with it, whether or not you're going to read reversed with them, or whether they want to be handled by the clients and shuffled for their question, or, you know, and that's when you find out the answers to those questions, is during that time that you're getting familiar with the deck and getting it so that it will work for you. Now, once you have a ritual established for doing readings or how you do the readings and what kind of information that you want from this deck, you can kind of tell the deck, okay, this is my standard reading ritual. This is how I'm going to use you, and they will start, I guess, conforming themselves to respond to that instead of saying, no, I don't want to be read like that. I want to be read like this. So future decks will become easier because you already have the ritual established, and then it's just a matter of during meditations, when you're sleeping with them under your pillow, of getting them to cooperate with that ritual because it's already established.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, like, if you're going to own multiple decks, try not to create elaborate rituals for each deck, because that will set you off, you know, on, like, totally divergent mindsets when you're trying to sit down to read them.
Most definitely.
Because I know, like, I own half a dozen decks, but most of them I own because of the artwork. You know, I just happen to be a fan of Will Worthington's work. So, you know, if I was to read all of those, then I would want to stick to a specific ritual. And in my case, you know, it does involve knocking the deck up and then, you know, smudging the space that I'm reading in, just to sort of create that ritualized, cleansed space for the reading.
Mm-hmm. And to get you into that mindset again.
For sure. Now, are there any listeners out there who have a question for Brian or Joy that you want to ask, or is there any kind of question that we haven't dealt with that, you know, has been on your mind for readings before or since? Before that you've done. The number to call in is 646-564-9966, and you are welcome to phone in. There's about 25 minutes left of tonight's show, but next week we will do a full two-hour show, so there will be a lot of time to talk about the cards and for you guys to phone in with your questions.
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention is do get your favorite deck. Do have it sectioned out into the major arcana and the minor arcana, and have the minor arcana broken down into suits so that you have one pile that's rods and one pile that's coins and one pile that's swords and one pile that's cups. Oh, goodness. and have those broken out and put in order, because we're going to be dealing with next week when I talk the aces, all four of them, and we're also going to be dealing with at least the Fool of the Major Arcana and possibly the Magician as well. I don't know if I'm going to do both of them that night, but it's possible that I could, depending upon time. So have them broken out so that you can, you know, refer to them and look at those cards while I'm talking about the card, and you can relate it to what you feel those cards are telling you that they represent. Because I'm going to have my cards here, and they're going to be broken out just the same way so that I can look at them and say, okay, this card says to me, when I look at it, this. And this is the artwork that's on it, and this is how I relate it into a reading. And when it's with these cards, it means this. And when it's with another card, it can mean that, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, if you are the type of person who chose a deck that doesn't sort of adhere to the standard four suits of tarot, you're going to probably want to be really familiar with what symbols mean what, because I know there's a particular deck, I can't think of its name right now, where, like, instead of pentacles, they have acorns or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So if you've got a cutesy deck, all power to you. Just sort of be familiar with what the suits are, because otherwise you're going to have a lot of trouble interrelating. That's why, in my own case, when I choose tarot decks to read with, I tend to stick with the ones that are, like, associated with the Rider-Waite style suits and symbolism. And that's why the Robin Wood tarot is really useful as well.
Robin Wood tarot seems to be the go-to deck for most Wiccans and pagans. Mainly because Robin Wood herself is pagan. She's a wonderful artist. If you've never seen any of her work, she used to do a lot of paintings for Dragon Magazine. She's done the Illustrated Guide to Xanth. She collaborated with Anne McCaffrey. Not Xanth, I'm sorry. The Illustrated Guide to Pern. She collaborated with Anne McCaffrey. She did the drawings for them. And it's really detailed, wonderful artwork. She kind of departed from it a little bit with the deck itself. She used more of a crayon-y style coloring and colored pencils, actually, I believe it was, Prismacolors.
Probably,
And it gives a different flow to the artwork. It's a little bit more simple. It's a lot more primary, rather than being extremely detailed and elaborate paintings and pencil drawings. But it's still just absolutely wonderful, and her energy is infused throughout her deck. And it's really, really good, and it's really easy, and there's lots and lots and lots of Wiccan symbolism in there. If you're, you know, familiar with Wicca and the beliefs of Wicca, and the four elements and the goddesses and the gods and basic pagan belief, you can find those that symbolism in there constantly. So I'm probably going to be mentioning that a lot. As David was saying, the non-standard decks, I know that there are also a lot of decks out there that not only use things like, we've got the Merlin deck here that uses serpents and fish and dragons and beasts instead of the standard four.
Interesting.
Yeah. But it also, in the minor arcana cards, it has no symbolism on it at all. What it will do is, if you draw the four of fish, which would be the four of cups, instead of having a picture of four fish, it has a Celtic knot made out of four fish, and that's it. It doesn't even say it's four fish or four cups. It has a mnemonic at the bottom saying what it represents. The only artwork in it is in the major arcana. So if you're going to use something like that, and I know that there's a couple of Celtic decks that use that, I know the Merlin Tarot uses that, I know there's a few others that use a very simple symbolism for the basic cards like that. My suggestion is going to be not to use it for this class or this set of podcasts, simply due to the fact that that is a very, very specialized study, and that is something that you really have to concentrate on and focus on. And the symbolism that I'm going to be referring to and mentioning is just not present on the card, so you can't use it as a mnemonic. Learn the basic Rider-Waite structure, the basic images that are there, the basic meanings that everybody agrees that these cards have, and then use that beginning knowledge to learn those specialized decks even deeper.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're interested in getting into some real symbolism with the Rider-Waite deck, Eden Gray released a handbook for tarot that it's gone by several names that I've seen, but it's the same book. I can't even remember the name I have, but it's basically a really good handbook for the Rider-Waite deck. With the Robin Wood Tarot, there's a book that is like written for it specifically that goes into a lot more modern symbolism and interpretation for each card.
Oh yeah. Anytime you can get the book that comes along with the deck. I mean, every deck that when you buy it has a small pamphlet that tells you what the different cards mean. A lot of decks these days have an additional book that is written specifically for that deck and how to interpret it and what each card means and the specific, you know, symbolism and artwork that's in the cards. It goes into the history of that particular deck. It goes into the artist's thoughts, and usually they're penned by the artist. Anytime you can get a book like that, your particular deck has that, get it. It's going to show you so many different insights and so many different nuances. For instance, the Robin Wood deck has the general court cards of the page, the knight, the queen, and the king. In most decks, you have the page is a young boy, the knight is a young man, somewhere around 18 to 25. The queen is, of course, a mature lady, somewhere right around 30, 35. And the king is a mature gentleman somewhere right around early 40s. In the Robin Wood deck, however, what isn't obvious is that the page is a young girl. She's about 6 to 8 years old. And while the artwork image has a child with long hair, most of the secondary sexual characteristics like breasts and things like that aren't shown because a child doesn't have those. And a young child typically can grow their hair long. So the page can look like a boy, and if you don't know that it's a girl, you could mistake it for a boy very easily because every other deck out there uses the symbolism as a boy. In the book, however, it specifically says that she saw that there were boy, boy, girl, boy arrangement and thought that that was kind of dumb. And so she made it girl, boy, girl, boy to balance it out. Because
I never
noticed
that, actually.
Yeah.
But that does make sense.
And that's, you know, and that's something that you find out in the book. She also talks about a little bitty token that the page is wearing on her belt. One is a pipe, a pan pipe. Another one is a telescope, small telescope. Another one is, I believe, a quill. And that is another piece of symbolism that is related into what those pages do. And I had never noticed this until I actually looked at the book and was reading about the pages, and I went, yeah, that's in there. And I got the card out, and I looked at it and went, sure as the hell. You know, and I was just shocked at it.
Yeah, I've actually just noticed that the Druidcraft Tarot uses princesses and princes instead of pages and knights. So,
well, yeah, so, you know, other people are seeing this and noticing the lack and changing it around. I thought that was kind of cool. And it was a very subtle thing that you could very easily miss. But anytime, like I said, you get a book about the deck that's a subsequent book, an additional book, get that. I also know that the Robin Wood deck is used in another book called Tarot Spells, which is about using the tarot decks as focuses for spellcrafting. And I got that one because it had the Robin Wood Tarot in it, and this was the only book available at the time when I bought the deck. The book that Robin wrote about her own deck actually was written, I believe, something along the lines of 15 years after the deck was published, and it was from an incredible amount of pressure from people who had bought her deck and wanted her interpretations on the deck.
Yeah, for sure. And that book does go into a lot of detail about different symbolism and people that are represented by each card, which I found really refreshing considering the fact that, like, the Eden Grey book is very blunt and very sort of straightforward. You know, the roses and their colors are, you know, and the white lilies mean something and, you know, this sort of thing. But it doesn't go into all the types of different people that could be represented by each card, which made it hard as a student of tarot to kind of select a significator for someone who didn't fit the rigid characteristics that are represented in the Eden Grey book for each card.
Yeah.
Now, when you're doing a reading, do you use significators or do you find them unnecessary?
I use significators if the deck tells me to. And when I say that, part of my ritual is once I've cleared my mind, I shuffle the deck three or four times, concentrate on the client's question, and start shuffling the cards. Occasionally, because the Robin Wood deck is a slightly oversized deck, you'll fumble it a little bit and a card will jump out, or two cards or four cards or something along those lines. You're supposed to usually read those as a separate commentary on something that is going on. If it's a single card, and I turn it over and I look at it, and it seems to match the person that is asking the question, I will use that card as a significator. Typically, however, I don't use a significator, simply due to the fact that it takes an additional card away from the rest of the reading.
That's exactly why I don't do it.
Yeah, that could potentially be used to clarify an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if I do use a significator, it will be the card that either I feel represents them best, like one of the court cards or one of the major arcana, or it will be their zodiacal representative in the major arcana. I don't know if you know about this, but there are 12 cards in most decks that get related to the different signs of the zodiac. For instance, strength is typically related to the house Leo because of the big lion on it.
That does make sense.
And there's a lot of energy in the strength card that also goes along with the sun sign Leo. There's 12 different cards like that. I believe Justice is Virgo. I think the Devil is Capricorn, which is me. yeah, it's kind of funny when you think about it. But if I do use a significator, typically it will be one of those or one of the court cards that I feel best represents them, and that's all a significator is. But if you have the client sitting there with you, a significator is, in my opinion, redundant, because the significator is representing the client who's asking the question. Well, if the person is right there across the table from you, why do you need it?
Yeah, for sure. And as you said, I mean, it takes away one card from the deck that may have a place in the reading somewhere that, you know, could be more useful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, about reading the cards reversed. Now, I know that there are a lot of decks that I've seen come out with the books that don't even mention reversals. But at the same time, I find, in my case, and it's only a personal preference, that there's kind of... It sort of limits the way you can read the card if you're always looking at it, you know, upright. Because I tend to enjoy being able to read that reversal just because it adds dimension to the card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially signifying, like, meaning, like delays and that sort of thing. We have just shy of 10 minutes left.
Okay. Then I'll make this quick. I tend not to read reversals. Simply due to the fact that there are enough negative cards in the deck to give me all the nuances I need. My wife, who taught me about the tarot cards, didn't read reversals either. But several years ago, she read a book called Tarot Reversals, which spoke specifically about the reverse tarot cards. And while she still doesn't read reversals now, it really opened her eyes to a lot of things that could be. Like I said, I don't personally read reversals, and I've been criticized by that a couple of times by people who, you know, say I'm cutting out half of the deck. Well, that may be true, but I'm a good enough reader, and I have enough confidence in my own abilities that if a card is coming up in a negative spin in the reading, it's going to tell me, okay, this is not a good thing. And if I need clarification, I have more cards that I can go to. I can just throw down three quick cards on that card and make sure that, you know, I'm reading what is there correctly. And typically reversals aren't necessarily the reverse of what the card is showing. A lot of times it's a negative spin on it. For instance, the Six of Swords tends to represent a travel, with the emphasis being on a mystical travel, because the guy's in a boat, there's six swords around, he's going to a distant point, and Charon is there with him, punting him along. So it tends to mean, you know, taking a mystical or spiritual journey. Now, in a reverse position, that can mean that it is not necessarily a mystical journey, but a physical one. And it can also mean that this is not necessarily a good mystical journey, but this is a negative, a dip into depression. And it's something that they have to go through to come out the other side and be reborn and get better. A rite of passage, if you will.
Yeah, that's kind of the take I use for that card as well. The idea that it may not necessarily be something that you want, but it may be a necessary step in your progress in life or in your spiritual journey or what have you, to kind of undergo that sort of rite of passage, mm-hmm. that dark night of the soul, or that time to, you know, to sort of take stock and enter within your own soul. To sort of look at your life. We will definitely go into that when we talk about
the
sixes, because, yeah, I mean, that each card is going to have so much fun, like, to discuss with. The major arcana, I mean, there's so many different things that each of those can represent. And
oh, yeah. I'm with the Merlin deck, like I was talking about, the book itself has – like 10, 12 pages dedicated to each of the major arcana cards, what it means, what it represents, what every little piece of symbol on the artwork means. And then there's maybe a dozen pages at the end of the book dealing with the entire minor arcana. And it's kind of funny because it's like, these are so brief as to be useless. But with the mnemonic on the card itself, you know, you kind of can relate to it and go, all right, I can understand why they made this so brief, because typically the major arcana tends to be archetypes. They tend to be things that are in the mystical realm, the heavenly realm, with the gods. They're very black and white. The minor arcana, however, are very material plane cards. They are shades of gray. They are not just one thing, not just another, but a combination of three or four things. And that tends to mean that if you get this card, the person reading tends to bring more of themselves into the interpretation of those cards than if you had something that is all one way or all another, like with the major arcana.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, that there are a lot of decks where the focus is on the major arcana, and I guess those are kind of, I mean, there are books actually that totally ignore the minor arcana altogether. And there are some decks, well, decks in quotation marks, that you can buy that are only the major arcana.
There's also a deck that you can buy that's not, that doesn't have a major arcana in it. It's the one of the witches decks, which looks like playing cards, literally.
The gypsy playing card deck or something like that, I think.
Yeah, but that's not the one by Raymond Buckland. I've got that one, and that's the tarot deck. No, this is just a deck of playing cards, and on like the bottom third of the deck, there's a picture that represents what the card is. And it's very accurate to the minor arcana, just without the pages. But it's supposedly what was used in the gypsy camps when people would come and, you know, cross their palm with silver. And it's another way of reading and interpreting it.
Yeah, I've actually seen those cards. And, I mean, for me, the first cards that I was reading as a kid of, you know, like 11 or 12 was playing cards, because I found a book in, like, the public library that was just ancient and tattered and falling apart that was how to read the playing cards, you know? And I was like, this is very cool.
Well, since the playing cards came straight out of the minor arcana of the tarot deck and then just and removed the pages and made two of them jokers, you know, it's a very valid way of doing a quick and dirty reading when you don't have your deck with you, but you do have some cards.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, that it allows that portability and prediction, you know, without freaking people out who might be otherwise kind of set on edge if they see a tarot deck in their midst.
Right.
So it's kind of a sneak way of doing a tarot reading for someone.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was kind of funny was in Robert Asprin's myth series with Skeeve and Oz and a few others, he has a game in there called Dragon Poker, which, from his commentary, is essentially a tarot deck. And he came up with a game with it. But there's a joke that goes along with, I accidentally played poker with tarot cards and killed five people with a full house.
Nice.
I heard that the first time and just lost it, because it can be seen that way, and it's funny when you don't know. But anyway, go ahead.
Excellent. So we've got shy of 2 minutes left. I want to thank you, Joy, for showing up tonight.
Hey, it's no problem.
I'm looking forward to this being a weekly thing. Folks, do, you know, bring your deck out so that you can have a look at it with us. Don't be afraid to call into the show. It's going to be something that I hope is going to last a long time, but also, stay tuned for our flagship show Saturday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern as well. This weekend, we're covering marijuana, and then Sunday night, we're going to be premiering a Sunday night show, Spiritual Roundtable, with a couple of guests, Ben and Lincoln. So you guys can hit up the blog for the show. It's woodwose-radio.tumblr.com. And if you have any questions or any suggestions, hit me up at woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca. Also, if you want to listen to the show on Saturday, we're going to be having a giveaway for a bracelet that was donated by an Etsy seller. So if you want to enter for a chance to win a couple of bracelets, send your name, your mailing address, and your preferred online pseudonym to the address as well, woodwose.radio@yahoo.ca. thank you for joining us, and see you guys next week.
Y'all have a good time. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you again.